With our very special guest tonight, Dr. Judy Wood, we're talking about where did the towers go and her theory, her thoughts on the evidence of directed energy technology. And we'll be back with her and much more on Coast to Coast AM. And we're with Dr. Judy Wood. Judy, tell us some more about some of the strange evidence that you found. I think that's important.
Well, various first responders were running down the street when the towers were going poof. And it became total blackout because the dust was so fine and it went up, it blocked out 100% of the sunlight.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were relieved that the cars were going into spontaneous combustion because now they could see where they're going. And there was an emergency technician who had her coat catch on fire. She didn't describe in her socks, she didn't describe really being burnt or anything hitting her. But she was kind of like a human flashlight, and could see where she was going. And that seems pretty bizarre.
Yeah.
That, a lot of folks will say that, well, maybe the cars were towed that were burnt, but you have eyewitnesses as to when they went up in flames. And there's a parking lot that is about, 500, 600 feet from the North Tower that had spontaneous combustion. All the cars were just, up in flames. You don't know, it looks like flames. Who knows what it was? And there's evidence that this was not hot fire. Hot things glow, but not everything that glows is hot.
And I was going to say, was it unbearably hot at all down on the ground level?
Some of the first responders I've actually talked to said that it was the dust cloud was initially cooler than ambient temperature, a surprise.
And Judy, when you talk to some of the first responders and you're looking for evidence to come up with and see where the conclusions will take you, were they asking you why you're doing this? Were they offended in any way, or were they pretty willing to talk?
Some didn't want to be identified because of all of the hoopla around it. They would hint to me as to where to find further information also. Since my book has come out, I've had various first responders and people who are at the scene email me and just in awe, it's exactly what, they saw. I didn't have time to ask a couple in the past few days. I hope I'm not overstepping. There was someone who told me about leaving Tower 1 and walking past Tower 2 to the ferry terminal. And where they were, they looked back, and they wouldn't be able to see the tower from where they were because there's buildings in the way. But someone came up and said Tower 2 just collapsed. And they all thought that this guy was nuts because nobody felt anything, nobody heard anything. And the fires, they thought, were just about out when they passed the building. So things like that have really struck me as quite interesting.
Did any of the responders tell you that they were baffled, that things were strange down there?
Oh, very much. And, they felt like they were going nuts, the weirdness that goes on. And, again, people need answers to questions. And if they've not seen something before, they try to make it into something they have seen before and try to make sense out of something that is crazy. Like one fellow who left Tower 2, just where it went poof, dove under an emergency vehicle, the first responder, and thought that he was buried because everything went black. But then when the dust cloud cleared and sunlight came in, it was right above him, sunlight. No truck.
No.
He thought he was underneath the vehicle, and the vehicle was now gone.
Wasn't there some kind of a unit on the top of Tower 2 that was falling, and then it just simply disintegrated?
The top of Tower 2 kind of tipped over and stopped tipping and just turned into powder.
And, just poof, off it went.
It shrunk down at the level where they had the hole in the building, around the 78th floor where the damage was. From there up, it tipped over, and then it kind of shrunk up and turned to powder before the rest of the building went away. And where it would have fallen, had it fallen down, it would have landed on Tower 4. or building four, which is a 9-story building. And that building disappeared. The main body of building four is just
it was gone. Yeah.
And the north wing remains as though an X-Acto knife sliced it off. And you could look in on people's desks and see what was in there.
Have you seen any evidence like this anyplace else?
Yes. Tornadoes. They weren't as well, you know, organized. But when I was a little kid, our family was driving west to go visit my grandmother, and we went through Topeka, Kansas, right the morning after that horrendous tornado went through.
Yeah, well, that's Tornado Alley.
And there was this apartment building, I'll never forget, that was sliced in two, and half of it was gone. And what was left, you could look in and see that somebody had, their bed was still made, the white bedspread, and it had magazines on the bed, some books on the dresser, some clothes hanging in the closet. I remember the bedspread looked just like my sister's, and the bed was still made. It wasn't messed up. It wasn't like, you know, a tornado went through their bedroom. You know, it was just like the building was sliced off.
You've talked about a hurricane in the vicinity during 9/11. I've never heard of that before. Are you sure?
Very sure. How I came to find it, and I don't remember one either. I was looking at how the dust went up, and I thought I'd get a better picture because how far up did it go into the upper atmosphere? And I went looking for satellite images, weather satellite images, and wait a minute, what is that? It's a hurricane, Hurricane Aaron, the longest-lived hurricane of the season, the first big hurricane of the season, and it began forming in August of 2001. And it went to a Category 3, went just past Bermuda, and for 4 days, it went in a straight line towards New York City. At 8 a.m., it stopped outside of town, like it pulled up to a chalk line.
And stopped?
Yep. Made a U-turn, just about a 110-degree turn, and then went out of town that afternoon.
Hurricanes don't stop and turn, Judy.
And it can, but there's this big high-pressure system that covered basically the whole country. The whole country was clear blue sky.
What is the significance of this?
Well, I started wondering, what do tornadoes do, or what do hurricanes do? That was a Freudian slip there. They have field effects. And you have, you can kind of tell where the tornado or hurricane, sorry, where a hurricane's going to go because the birds all leave town. Spiders pack up their webs. People who have arthritis often talk about feeling a storm coming. There's a different energy in the air that is sensed, and it is a distinct electrical energy that's outside of the outer bands of the hurricane as it's approaching. And what we measured in and around Manhattan on 9/11 at the three major airports, LaGuardia, JFK, and Newark airports, was thunder that day. So that right there is evidence that that indeed was within that reach. Well, let's look at what else happens with hurricanes and tornadoes, these torsional kind of weather systems. There's a picture in my book, also on my website, of a car sitting on a fence, a wooden fence, underneath the roof of a house. The car is not damaged. It's not scratched up. It didn't tumble there. It had to have levitated there and then come to a gentle rest, right balanced on this fence. And I think what a lot of people have seen before, cars sitting in trees or sitting on telephone poles in a similar way. And we assume that, you know, a tornado sucks them up and drops them there, or a big wind, you know, blows them there.
Sure.
Just like straw through trees. You know, if you say that it's because the straw is flying fast. Well, does it make the straw infinitely stronger than the tree? You know, why is the straw embedded in the tree? And it's also got a picture of a tubifer through a palm tree, and another one of a plywood through a palm tree, big sheet of plywood. You start looking at the similarities of the effects seen on 9/11 with the similarities with the Hutchison effect, or that same type of physics. You can call it Tesla technology.
Tesla, yeah.
Whatever name, a lot of people have different names for it. There's great similarities. Well, how does John Hutchison create those same effects? He has a Tesla coil or a Van de Graaff generator to create a static field, and within that interferes a radio frequency signal. Well, we have a static field. If you look at the structure of a hurricane, it's like a giant, supersized Tesla coil.
You submitted some kind of a request for corrections to the, the National Institute of Standards?
Yes, the National Institute of Standards and Technology. They were mandated by Congress to determine, quote, why and how the World Trade Center towers collapsed. And that was actually in the title of their report, the final report on the collapse of the World Trade Center towers.
And I think their report, if I remember, was the burning of the beams, the metal, and the pancake effect, right?
Right. And they hired contractors to help them with the report, like Underwriters Lab made a mock-up of the floors and set it on fire. And they cooked it for like twice as long. And they still couldn't get it to fail to support load. So they had to call the test. They did four of those. And four out of four did not fail. They couldn't get them to fail with fire.
So why in the heck did they come up with that theory for the towers?
Submitted also filed a QTAM case, a federal QTAM case, calling that science fraud. They signed off a report saying fire did it when they proved the fire didn't do it. Or they couldn't prove the fire did it.
Do you think the study, the report, was a cover-up or just incompetence?
Congress had worded it and, directed them and put boundaries around it so that they couldn't come up with anything else but that. For example, Applied Research Associates, ARA, one of their main things is energy weapons, were the biggest contractors on the NIST report.
I know, but you missed my question. Cover-up or incompetence?
They were directed in their contract, they were not to say what did it. They were instructed not to say what did it. So it's through instructions like that. Who's responsible for the instructions? If you limit the report and put boundaries around it, they...
Well, then it sounds like cover-up.
Yeah. It was meant as a sort of psychological operation in a sense. 10,000 pages that don't address the problem, but to lead people to think that it was studied.
Are you alone in this conclusion that some kind of directed energy did this?
I have a few supporters around me, but not a lot of people want to be vocal about this.
Well, they just, there's that small group of the 9/11 truth seekers, but other than that... most people just don't want to hear about it anymore. I mean, right now, the world's hoopla is over Bin Laden's death and what's going to happen, whether there's going to be any retaliation. Give me, because if you can't, Judy, tell me right now, but I'd like your thoughts on how you think this came about and why. If you didn't study that part of it, then just tell me.
Well, what I can say is, a lot of folks will say that because NIST kind of covered it up, it's a government agency, mm-hmm. Directing its private contractors to cover it up, however they directed them to, doesn't that imply guilt? And my answer is no. That does not prove who did it. This is somebody's classified technology. Doesn't, define who. Whether it's the U.S.'s or somebody else's, whether it's another country or just an entity somewhere else.
Or an entity might have.
Yeah, there's some various scenarios that you can come up with as well. But if it is the U.S.'s top secret technology and somebody else got a hold of it and used it, they don't want people to know that.
All right, why concoct a plan where you hijack planes, you kill civilians, You take down a building. What's the reason?
Well, I'm not the person who planned it, so I can't, you know, I do deal more with physical evidence about, you know, what happens. And we do have evidence about what has happened since then. And like what is written, you know, the foreword to this book written by Eric Larson,
mm-hmm.
the first sentence of that foreword is, I think, quite appropriate. Let me read it. It says, "The book you hold in your hands is the most important book of the 21st century. Everything that has happened just about since then hinges on 9/11, hinges on an assumption of what happened on 9/11. And so much has taken place because of that." Here's a, you know.
Well, the world isn't the same, and it never will be, I don't think.
Right. So whoever orchestrated this, you know, say, why did they orchestrate it? They didn't want the world to be the same.
Did you need the buildings to go down? Wasn't the horror of the planes, watching them smash into the buildings, wasn't that enough?
That for, if you make an assumption as to what the objective was, but if you look at what, you know, did take place, you know, it's very, you know, like Building 4 went away. It's gone. But across the street is Burger King, and they're still flipping burgers in there, and the power's still on.
Yeah.
That gets, that really bothers me. It just, how could it be so isolated, so exact? Like Building 7, the post office was right next door, right across the street, three lanes of traffic away. And the building didn't, the 47-story building didn't even spill across the street. Not a scratch.
And that post office building, I assume, still there functioning, right?
It didn't even get a scratch on it.
Yeah, that's strange. You would have thought that there would have been a lot of collateral damage there.
If you have a building collapsing down, like from controlled demolition, you have pieces that go flying at pretty big speeds, and you'd have a lot of pock marks all over.
Well, and that's controlled demolition.
Right.
If this was supposed to be a tragic, horrible situation, if it wasn't controlled, bricks, glass, this should have scattered everywhere.
Right. If it was bombs in the building, I'm saying, if you had stuff shooting out, or if it was even just a gravity collapse, I went through the calculations of all of the air having to escape out of the building. At the rate in which the building went away, the air would be having to escape in excess of Mach 2.
So you are saying, don't let me put words in your mouth, that there's some entity, something, somebody, some group that has weaponized directed energy technology, and they have the capability of aiming it at structures, bridges, and taking these things down.
Yes.
That's kind of frightening.
And is another scenario for when people say, well, of course the U.S. did it. And here's my, you know,
I would say no.
Here's my counter to that, saying, let's say you're a group of five people and you want to take over the U.S. Well, you walk in the front door, you know, here we are. The U.S. military is going to get you. You're not going to get very far.
That's right.
So let's say you have this technology, you poof the towers. And you get all of this mayhem going. You get this truth movement started that starts causing this distrust in the U.S. government, and they start, you know, tearing up the country from within until the country wants anything but its own government.
Interesting. Let's talk more about that, Judy. We'll talk more about that when we come back, because now you're onto something. And our special guest tonight, Dr. Judy Wood, as we talk about her work, Where Did the Towers Go? We'll be back with Judy in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Back to what you were saying, Judy, and so whatever group has this device uses it to cause chaos from within, hires a bin Laden and his group of cronies to do what they do for the image, for the look, and then they start to eat and whittle away at a very powerful nation. Possible?
Very possible that look what happened. And I believe in looking at the evidence, and that's what the evidence shows.
Kind of frightening, isn't it?
But let's look at the good in this. And I'll read something from near the end of my book. It was inspired by a blogger named Stephen Warren, and I've added to that. We stand at the dawn of an entirely new age. By all evidence, man has in his hands a method of disrupting the molecular basis for matter and the ability, very possibly, to split the earth in half on a moment's notice. The technology demonstrated on 9/11 can indeed split the earth in half, or it can be used to allow all people to live fruitful, constructive, and non-polluting lives through their use of free energy. He who controls the energy controls the people. Control of energy, depending on what that energy is, can either destroy the planet or sustain the planet. But we have a choice, and that choice is real. We can live happily and fruitfully and productively, or we can destroy the planet and die. Every last one of us, along with every living being on this planet. The important thing is for us to realize we have a choice and to help others realize that choice is ours.
Can this technology cause earthquakes?
Yeah, but earthquakes are already there anyway. Did it cause these last ones most recently? I don't believe so. And it's, you know, I'd have to see some pretty good evidence of it. But it's, earthquakes are kind of normal, especially along that line. Japan was sort of due for an earthquake. Now, the question of having this power plant very near a fault line,
right,
that's something that we should really think carefully about. I think we could have this free energy technology instead. We wouldn't have things like the Fukushima thing going on.
I don't think we'll ever get to a point, Judy, though, where we get free energy because there's too much greed out there.
That's right. He who controls the energy controls the people and wants to maintain control of that.
Now, take us through the use of the weapon from the moment they flip the switch. What happens?
Oh, I didn't design this. I can tell you.
I hope not.
Right. Yeah, I wouldn't be talking about it if I had. But instead of talking about, you know, the name of it or, you know, the serial number of it or the social security number of the people who flip the switch, I think what it can do is much more important.
But, I mean, but what is it acting on? Particles in the atmosphere? Vibration? What does it do?
It affects the molecular structure of matter. It's akin to also cold fusion. It's a kind of a derogatory name. Low energy nuclear reaction, I prefer to call it. It's got a whole lot in common with that.
And to take down a building, you've got to really kick up the juice, right?
Not necessarily. That's another myth.
Really? How come?
If you have free energy technology, you don't need to worry about kicking up the juice, you know, about plugging something into, the wall socket. If you think about a tornado, where does that energy come from? A tornado comes up sort of out of nowhere.
It's out of nowhere. It's out of the atmosphere.
It has
unbelievable
destructive properties.
Yeah. It takes it.
Yeah, it creates something from nothing because it appears to create something from nothing.
But I didn't. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I didn't ask you about HAARP. Does that have anything to do with any of this?
There's a lot of terms that people like to use. They have, you know, HAARP, Nazi Bell, scalar weapons, all sorts of different type of trendy terms for technology. And I think that assigning a name to a technology really pulls a veil of mystery over it. It ends up being like the boogeyman that everything gets blamed on, rather than understanding what it can do. And we all can understand what it can do, and I think that's the most important thing. The term that I would have for this gizmo would reflect what it can do and what it's made of, what it does. And the term I would call that is magnetic electrogravitic nuclear reaction.
Interesting. Now, why haven't we seen it turned against us in other regions of the country?
How do we know?
Well, we haven't seen stories of pulverized buildings.
Well, there was one in 1995.
What was that?
Oklahoma City.
Well, and we also have Tim McVeigh and McNichols, or Nichols.
This, what I look at is the physical evidence, and I see cylindrical cutouts in the buildings, the same approximate diameter, and the toasted cars were also present there, where cars, you know, go into spontaneous combustion for apparently no reason. You have a fire break out on the side panel of a car. Gas tank doesn't explode. Just, you know, strange things like that.
All right, but for 10 years, I'm saying, for 10 years since 9/11, we haven't had anything like this happen.
Or since then, you're saying, or?
Yes.
Well, there's other suspicious events like the bridge in Minnesota, where you have every single support give way at the exact same moment.
Structural defect. They screwed up the bridge.
So you have like a dozen different supports that suddenly give way at the exact same moment, to the point that the vehicles on the bridge ride the bridge down and the people get out of their cars when it lands.
Well, if what you say is true, if what you say is accurate, then we're under attack. If they're systematically using this device in certain regions at a whim, aren't we?
Somewhat. It's new technology is being used by the wrong people.
What do they want?
I don't know what that end result is, but I see what it's doing. It's one thing I wonder about is, you know, is that pretty soon become the norm? You know, seeing buildings turn to powder in midair. Oh, that's normal because we saw three others do it just like that. I don't know.
Let's take some calls. They're lining up here for you, Judy. Let's go to Wausau, Wisconsin. Ridge, you're up with us east of the Rockies. Hey, Ridge.
Hi. My thought on this whole thing is that there's a possibility that there's an energy system that they've already put in a number of buildings, and when the airplanes flew into them, caused an oscillation, and the energy systems that were already in the building went offline and caused this from the building up rather than it coming from someplace else and going to the building down.
Interesting. So you're saying it was already within?
Right.
What do you think of that, Judy?
I don't know if it would necessarily have to be within the building. And that would be, you know, as for a lot of people have thought about having a self-destruct mechanism in a building, and my answer to that is, oops, boss, sorry, I leaned on the wrong button. Sorry about your building. There'd be mistakes made, and you'd be just, you know, right the center of a target for any kind of terrorist to get to that switch, to flip the switch, to make a building go.
At any time.
Right.
How big would this device have to be? I'm curious.
I don't know what size. It's the interference of the energy that does.
Like a bus, a van? What do you think?
Oh, it's whatever can create this energy signal. Again, look at John Hutchison's work. A Van de Graaff generator or a Tesla coil. And a radio frequency signal. Now, what size gizmo do you need to create a radio frequency signal? Well, it depends on which ones you create and where and so forth. It's not so much the power of the unit as the way one affects the other. Let's look at how we get alternating current. You move an electrical conductor within a magnetic field and you get electricity. In a way, people could say that's getting something from nothing. It's the interaction of those things that creates the electricity.
You know, Richard Hoagland sent your book to Jesse Ventura, who, you know, used to be on the fence about 9/11. He isn't anymore. And he thinks that they're either part of it, aware of it, or buffoons, as he would say. And, you know, he's not so sure which of the three, but he's convinced it's one of the three. But Richard wanted to see your book to kind of get him into this other state of mind.
Surely the awareness is there. That it was interesting when I first sent my book to my dad to read. He started out skeptical, and then he got to the point where, well, certainly Congress needs to know about this. You need to send this book to Congress. And then a little bit later, it was, well, surely they know about this already. And then he got to the stage where, uh-oh, we're in a heap of doo-doo.
Yeah. Well, Judy, let me ask you, because this basically cost you your job at Clemson. Was it worth it? Would you do it again?
You know, seeing that somebody needs to do this, like what I told my mom, that, you know, if I didn't do it, nobody would have a job. We wouldn't, you know. Someone needs to speak out about it. If not, if you put your head in the sand and pretend it'll go away, it isn't going to make it go away. It's going to make it happen more and more. The more people who are aware of it, the more they can help to kind of curb it.
See, you bring a new mix to this. I think similarly to you in that, you know, Bin Laden was involved. His cronies were involved. I saw the planes hit the buildings. The thing was a tragic day beyond anything one could imagine. But I've always believed that there was another group involved that brought Bin Laden into the picture to do all the dirty work, and that their intent is to topple the United States. I never, ever thought George Bush was part of this at all. A lot of conspiracy theorists believe that. I don't. You know, he may not have been the world's greatest president by any means, but this is one thing I don't think he would have done. How much did Dick Cheney know? How much did other members know and just turn their head? You know, that's a big question.
You made the comment earlier about the book. It's something that, you know, should have been given to the 9/11 Commission and so forth. I essentially have done that in filing the federal QI-TAM case, taking the contractor's witness report to court on it. It's basically taking the military-industrial complex to court. I can't prove who did it, but I can prove who helped cover it up. And these people knew otherwise. Like I listed what Underwriters Lab did. ARA, Applied Research Associates, their yeah. area of expertise is development and manufacture of energy weapons.
See, well, that's interesting. But my biggest concern, though, Judy, of all this has always been Building 7. That, to me, was the juggernaut, the piece of the puzzle that just didn't make sense. It didn't seem to fit. A building that collapses, a huge building that collapses, and is basically not touched at all. A few little fires in it. I mean, it was weird. It was bizarre.
And it, basically didn't touch the ground either. There was a few pieces left, but...
It pulverized as well, didn't it?
It appears to have done that all afternoon. You saw fumes coming out of one face of the building until about an hour before its final demise, and then it was pouring out of another side of the building, but not any of the other faces. So you see, you'd think it'd be a traffic jam to get that, if it's smoke. Get the smoke out, it would have to be pushing its way out, but it wasn't being pushed out. It was being pulled out, if you can see from the videos. There's a open windows on the north face. Stuff isn't coming out that face, but every square inch of the building looks like it's emanating, you know, this dust. And it appears that there's a lot of mass coming out of the building for hours, all afternoon. And then you have nothing much slamming to the ground, signal-wise.
All right, let's go to Jeffrey in Davenport, Iowa, first-time caller. Hi, Jeffrey. Thanks for calling.
Hi, George. Thank you very much.
Sure.
I just agree. I feel, you know, I watched the second plane hit the tower. I sat and watched it all day. We have all these conspiracy theories about what has really happened. You know, everybody has their opinion. But it's just hard for me to believe that people have all these different theories when they just think you should accept the fact that the planes hit the buildings. This is what happened. None of this energy or anything that the planes brought the buildings down. I've watched many different things about on TV about how the planes and the metal was melted. I just find it really difficult to believe all these other things like the truthers and what I'm hearing today.
Well, I know that. I know how you feel, Jeff. And a lot of times we don't want to look at that, but there's no question the bizarre mix of all of this is Building 7 and why this went down the way it did. That alone, I think, makes everything suspect. It really does. In terms of this kind of technology, I'm pretty sure the governments or groups have been working on it for a long, long time. I'm not sure, Judy, that Tesla's technology was ever shelved. I think it was continued.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. And there was a document that was released, I think it was in 1970 or 1960, from Tesla's keeping, that he had sent something to Congress offering if they would construct towers every 200 miles around the perimeter of the country, he would put a box on top of each one that would cause a vertical wall through which any plane or anything would pass would, quote, dematerialize.
Absolutely. He originally wanted to knock out enemy planes en masse. I mean, I'm not sure that a guy who had that kind of technology, we would stop looking at it. We, you know, the FBI raided his home, wherever he lived after he died, took all his papers.
Yeah, his safe. He was in New York. Within hours, it went into somebody's keeping.
All his work, gone. I mean, that's amazing.
It is. And think, this is the guy who brought us alternating current.
Yep, absolutely. Well, Judy, stay with us. We're going to come back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM with a final hour of phone calls as we talk about this incredible story and her work, Where Did the Towers Go? I've got to ask you when we come back, Judy, where do you also get this book? It's a big one. We'll be right back.